Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to class number four, session four of module three, presenting the path. And here's my contact information if you are a first timer. I think so far what I've seen, you guys have been taking the classes, so you should have this information. And obviously, before we start, we want to start with prostrations, right? And if you want to do the prostration on your own, that's wonderful. If not, if you're seated on a chair or in your sofa, you can just mentally offer your prostrations, okay? We do three of them, and so I'll do it, and then go ahead and do it at your own pace. Om Namo Bhagavate. Om Namo Manjushri, Namo Sushi, Namo Tamashri, Soha. Om Namo Manjushri, Namo Sushi, Namo Tamashri, Soha. Okay, our typical routine would be to bring our minds to the present moment. So just get yourself situated with back straight. Of course, if you're sitting on the chair, your legs are flat on the floor. If you're seated on the floor, you want to do a Vajra or lotus position where your heels are over top of each other or just one over the other or just cross-legged. The idea behind all of this is that your body is in a position where the energy can flow freely and you're comfortable. You're not stressed out too much, nor you are leaning back on your chair, okay? Your arms are relaxed, open, underarms are open, and your head is tilted forward slightly. Your jaw and mouth are relaxed. Your tongue is touching on the top behind the teeth. Top part of your palate. Eyes are slightly closed or slightly open, whichever way you want to say it. Okay. And then what we're going to do is we're going to do a breathing exercise. Obviously, breathing is neutral, and this is a great way to calm your mind, take the distractions away, and it's just to bring your attention and develop concentration. So for a moment, just when you're breathing, either you can focus on your nostril with breath coming in and out, or you feel your abdomen going out and in, and just keep your focus on it and just watch your breath. And occasionally, you will find that your mind starts to drift. It gets into the story. You see these thoughts come up. Don't get hooked on those thoughts. Just observe them and know that they are just mere thoughts. And then they go away and bring your concentration back to your meditation. Okay, so let's do that for a couple of minutes. just remind ourselves of our motivation. We want to do this action of listening to teachings on this module, presenting the path, and to learn all the different topics that come under Lamrim, get an overview. We will even do a meditation on purification today. We'll learn a little bit about karma today and why, to develop our qualities so we can be of benefit to others, no matter how long it takes. Okay, now bring your attention to the class. Okay. I'm going to do something a little different today. Instead of going into each and every slide into details, we want to cover the topic of karma today. But what is important is to remember to link everything. What are we doing? What are we trying to learn here? What is this module all about? And so I think it's important to, once I go through a little bit of telling you the whole, a little bit about the path, then we'll go through the slides very quickly. Okay? So just to understand that we are talking about the path. These teachings are coming from Buddha himself. While Lama Atisha wrote the lamp for the path, Lama Tsongkhapa expanded on it and wrote the treatise to the path of enlightenment, right? So there's 84,000 teachings that were organized. Typically, you'll find that when you first start learning a little bit about Buddhism, there's always a snippets of things, right? You go to Google and you read a book and you go to a class, but it's all over the place. This is in an organized way called Lamrim, steps, graduated path, that takes you through the whole step of, and it builds upon the topics on top of each other until you get a full understanding of the entire teaching of the path to enlightenment. Again, today is May 3rd. This is our fourth class. There are seven classes, so we are on the halfway point now. One of the important factors in discovering Buddhism, this particular module, is to learn three principal aspects of the path. Like, you learn all of these topics, but you want to understand three things. You know, you need to develop a mind that says, I am ready to go and learn this. You want to renunciate from your typical things, latching onto things. So you create a mindset and yearning to learn. That's the renunciation. Then you want to learn how things exist, how things are. You know, my reality is, you kind of messed it up because our minds have a lot of obscurations, right? We've developed this over lifetimes and this life, of course. And so we don't see the way things exist. We go with our own narratives, our own ideas, and whatever our mind is telling us at that point in time. And then the last thing, you want to really want to be enlightened. You want to find happiness. You want to find the bliss. You want to become Buddha. And therefore, you need to also learn a little bit about bodhicitta and how do you go about doing that. So that's the point of this particular module. Okay? So, okay. And then, so to start with, we had to, of course, the first class was a nice video and so forth, and you got to get a little introduction. But then when we really started going into second class was, but if it's coming from Buddha, we talked a little bit about Buddha's life. And we saw how he left his home, how his young life was, how he was born, and then he got married, and then how he renunciated, and then how he went to learn under different teachers, how he accomplished all of those things. And he had those foresights when he was a prince in his kingdom about the old age, the sick person, a person that passed away. And then he saw a mendicant or a person that is like a wanderer searching. And he got worried, of course, and that what would happen to my life? Is this all about it? And what about my family? What about my loved ones? He had all these questions come up. So he searched for it under different teachers. 6 years or so, he went under a Bodhi tree, and he was determined that he was going to get the answers. And finally, he was enlightened. And only then, he was called Buddha. Till then, he was called Siddhartha, right? So we went through that. It was very important because this is the person who is experienced, a human being just like us, who became enlightened, and he taught till he passed away, right? And so a lot of the sutras or the discourses come from Buddha. And then we got into the three noble truths, I mean, the three turnings of the wheel, sorry, the four noble truths. And then we also learned that in, later on, Lama Atisha, who was an Indian pandit, a very accomplished teacher, he was invited by Tibetan king, and then he went to Tibet, stayed there for 17 years or so, and he wrote the first book, The Lamp for the Path. That's the beginning of the Lam Rim, organized way, step-by-step way. So he's the first one to do that. However, the teachings are all good from Buddha. So no matter who wrote the book, the teachings are straight from Buddha. Obviously, we also have Lama Tsongkhapa. He's the teacher of our lineage, Gelugpa tradition, right? He went through some definitions. We learned about qualities of Buddha, and then we went into a three preliminary contemplation. So just very quickly, understanding qualities of Buddha. This was important to me, and to I think it should be to you, because if we want to become a Buddha, we need to know what is that like. So we need to understand when we use this words like it's omniscience and it's omnipotent and, you know, knowing all, what does that look like? Now just imagine, just looking at the last sentence here, all-knowing, all-compassionate, all-wise, all-pervading. A wisdom that knows exactly what and how, where and when, and who, with the capacity to do what needs to be done to perfectly benefit all sentient beings. Completely free of obscurations. Pure. And that's the goal. Again, we touched on the three scopes, how things are organized, and why Lam Rim is so helpful. You know, and the three points to remember, we are covering the topics. If you look at it, we've already covered a lot of history, a lot of the lineage, and some of the contemplations, which I'll cover in a minute. But then when we look at Lam Rim, if you look at the scopes, just like our greatest school, right? You have kindergarten, junior school, middle school, high school, college. We understand that. When it comes to spirituality, it's like very nebulous. We don't think that it's, you can go step by step. So this is wonderful tools that have been organized by our teachers for us. And so how fortunate, right? So then in lower scope, what you're trying to do, if you think about the topics we've covered, death and impermanence, okay, suffering of the lower realms. And then we went into refuge. We started karma. Look at those topics, okay? And what is it doing, the lower scope? Striving for happiness in the future life. So when you're thinking, when we go through this outline even, you need to remember that, striving for happiness in the future life. What can I do now? How does it work right now? And what can I do so that my future life is not in, in the suffering realm or of a not such a good place to be, right? You want happiness. So that's what we're looking for. Right. I always think about getting lost in the woods or forest, for example. Right. You know, first you have to recognize you're lost. You can't find your way. So that's why you see these words of suffering and death and karma. A lot of times people think these words are like, oh, my goodness, you know, but you got to get a wake up call. You have to first recognize the situation you're in. Do you agree with that? And then you can determine how you can make a plan to get out of it. Right? So that's the point of Lam Rim, right? So striving for happiness. Now, next scope, then when we get into that next class, you're thinking about striving for liberation from cyclic existence. Till then, all these lives and births and next lives and realms, they're still within the cyclic existence or samsara is the Sanskrit word for it, right? The birth, the death, the old age, the sickness, the temporary happinesses, some not so good parts of life, and so forth, and then old age and death. And then finally, the great scope. You can be liberated by liberating yourself in the second scope by knowing all of those things, already fantastic. However, when you go to the great scope, the goal is to become enlightened. There's still subtle consciousness and habits that stay behind. It's out of habit. And so you want to go beyond that. So that's why we talked about the two ways of studying. The first two scopes, the group called Hinayana or the attitude in Buddhism, they are masters at the first two scopes. Mahayana takes it further and calls it the universal scope, right? And we'll talk about that. So be mindful of these preliminary and preparatory practices, knowing your teacher, understanding your lineage, understanding the contemplations, and then how things are organized. So then the preliminary contemplations. And why is this important? These are your fundamental. In science, you know, we call things called constant. These are constant. No matter what topic you're learning, you got to have these three things in your mind, somewhere in the back of your mind. Okay? The nature of mind. And if you have been reading your requirements, in the last one, which was not your homework, we can still do it next time for next time. But I'll read something that comes from that. And important to know the nature of mind. So I'll take the next step and then we'll talk about the nature of mind. And you can kind of read this if you want to. But I'll just read it, just kind of listen. It's written by Nick Raibush. He was a monk. You'll see a lot of his books and writings and teachings. He says, the mind of stream of consciousnesses is formless. It has no shape or color. It is impermanent, that is, changing from moment to moment. All impermanent phenomena are products of causes. Thus so is the mind. It does not arise from nothing. Furthermore, since effects must be similar in nature to their principal cause, we all understand this, you have to have a cause for an effect to take place. If I get up and walk towards the door, I go out of the door. If I put something in my mouth, I eat or drink. I mean, you have to have a cause to have an effect. That's what he's saying. Right? The principal cause of the mind must also be formless and not some material substance such as the brain. The mind proceeds from a previous state of mind. Each thought moment is preceded by prior thought moment, and that there has never been the first. In other words, it is continuous. We all want to know when did it start. But what it's saying is, it's always there. It continues, it just changes moment to moment, moment to moment. That's what it does. Right? Moreover, each mind comes from its own previous continuity and not from another mind, such as some cosmic consciousness or the minds of one's parents. Hence, each individual's mind is beginningless. And just as the physical energy never goes out of existence, disappearing into nothingness, so too does mental energy continue forever. Only its state changes. So that speaks to this slide. It is beginningless. It is your own. It is not physical, not body, soul, or brain, and has a marvelous potential. Okay? So now think about it. So many possibilities are open now, right? You have a mind that continues. It has been there before this body was there. And therefore, the good news is you have the option to make changes if you need to. And that's what makes it beautiful. Right? That's what makes it positive. And that's a very powerful statement. And if you think about refuge, karma, death and impermanence, this is it's all about. Right? So according to Venerable Robina, she says, so the mind for Buddha is where things happen. The mind is where the workshop is. It's so much fun. The mind is where everything happens. The mind is where source of suffering is. The mind is where the source of happiness is. The mind is the point. Right? Now, you have that fundamental thought. You must think through this constantly throughout all the topics, what's happening in the mind. Okay? So with that, we'll move forward. The next thing was it was very important to have a spiritual teacher and how one should devote your time, you know, yourself to the teacher. Of course, this is a tough topic even by the biggest Rinpoches. They say that for Western people, this is a tough topic. Right? I mean, I can Google everything. Why do I need somebody telling me what to do type thing? It's not that. This is not about that. This is about spiritual guidance. We need a doctor sometimes. and we need to go get the right type of prescription. And we need, we've had parents, we've had mothers, we've had teachers, grandmothers. They've always been teachers for you. If we were all learned from the birth, then we would not need anybody. But you, somebody taught you how to walk. Somebody taught you how to wear clothes. Somebody held your hand. So that's the point. Now, they're not saying that you should, before you start anything, you should jump and go find a teacher. No. It's very, very specific about how you should find the teacher. Look at the qualities of the teacher. Check their students out. Check their peers out. And it may take a while. Right? Then you have confidence and faith. And then having found the teacher, then you devote oneself. Because if they're teaching you the words of Buddha, how is it different than the Buddha teaching? Right? So you're not looking at the body. It's what you're learning. Buddha's teachings. So it's a good analogy would be like a sun and the rays. When you stand in the rays, you're in essence getting the rays of the sun. Right? So that's my own analogy.
Hey, Matt, we do have a question if you're up for that right now.
Oh, sure, sure.
Katie wants to know, is this connection, the teacher-student connection, called samaya?
I would say that is not true because, you know, maya is, from my best understanding, maya are all these attractions we have, attachments we have that can all be maya. Maya is just a nature of life in samsara. Teacher's teaching is purely a relationship that you develop in your mind. It's like a live person teaching you, but instead of somebody in the mind of nobody, you have a teacher teaching Buddha's words. So it's a little different in that way. But since we are in samsara, you have to be very careful who you choose your teacher to be. And so that is always important. And I don't know if I answered the question, but maya is a nature, it's part of the nature, how things happen in the phenomena, you know, how things that we are attracted to because of our delusions. And that maya plays there. This is purely teaching and learning and developing and devoting your life to somebody that's going to guide you through your process and hopefully show you the way to get out of samsara. Okay. So slightly different. You can put the entire thing under maya or you can separate it out poignantly. Okay. Then the third thing, I hope that that was somewhat helpful, but if not, we can talk about it after the class also. The next thing we talked about was the precious human rebirth. If you look at the Lamrim, pick up the Lamrim, you'll see that before they even get into the topic of any particular scope, they talk about the precious human rebirth. And what is important, we've already gone through it, that human life is just one option of many. Okay, think about that. You have an option to become a cat, dog, animal, in fact, so many things, or in desirams. We have qualities that other types of lives don't, and we've talked about that. Okay? Animals look pretty, but they are always tortured. They're always living in fear, and some have better life than the others. But in large scope, that's what it's all about, right? And there are suffering realms. We have an opportunity to practice. That's what makes this precious human life. And then, of course, they always talk about the richnesses and endowments and all that. We're not going to go through them, but if you were to take some key points out of it, you have a human rebirth. You are born or you're right now in a situation where you can practice dharma. You have reasonably healthy body, a little sane mind. At least you can pay attention in the class or listen to it or learn. You have reasonable conditions, a shelter and some food, and you're not completely overwhelmed by huge delusions. So those are some of the things we bring as a human with us. Those are the endowments or richnesses we have. Point being what? If you look at the three contemplations, the point is, here's your opportunity. Remember that line? You're striving for better lives. So this is a setup to now talk about topics because they want you to fully understand, keep this in back of your mind, how precious this life is. That you find a good teacher that walks you through the path nicely and that you understand how mind is, and mind is the point. Everything happens there. Right? So those are the three contemplations. So now we'll go through fairly quickly now. So this is the conclusion of the preliminary contemplations. We understand the nature of the mind, necessity for the teacher, and how to devote to a teacher, and then precious human rebirth. So whole point is the bottom line, don't waste it. So that's the idea. Okay. Then we started getting into the first scope, death and impermanence. And what's important here, again, that bottom line, striving for a better life. And what it's telling you is we live in a denial. We all know it. We don't want to think about it. I am 40 years old. I have a full life. I'll do this tomorrow. Right? And we all do that. They're trying to point that death is definite. It's a natural law. Right? It's natural. I mean, time of the death is uncertain. We don't know what will happen. We know statistically how many people die every minute, but we don't think it's going to be us. Right? The time of the death is extremely important. Why? Because that's when we set up this fear comes in. If you haven't practiced and you don't understand the continuity of the mind, if you don't understand the precious human rebirth, finding a good teacher, then what happens? You don't know. And then the cravings and the graspings that we've had all of our lives, that's what comes to your mind. Your person typically goes to what they are familiar with. Very straightforward put, right? And so it's important, this is what they're trying, so we need to train and prepare. So then there is no fear. And then, of course, we went into another intermediate stage where the mind, we went through the death process, actually, right? And we gave you an example of how when the body is going through the process, the earth element dissolves, the water element dissolves, the fire element dissolves, and the wind element dissolves. And then you have certain visions, internal visions. And then we go to subtle consciousness. The person is not dead. You may see on the screen a flat line. So the body movement is gone. But according to our teachings, there are still subtle things going on inside you. Subtle consciousness is still moving. And there are energies and winds in your body. And they come towards the subtleness of it. It's called the subtle consciousness. So they're slowly and steadily moving from bottom, from up. We have three major channels, and that's where they move. And they come towards the heart. And then at the eighth stage, you are ready to now, out of propensity of your karmic activity in the seeds and that subtle life, you're ready to move out. Okay? And at this stage, you're in bardo or intermediate stage, right? You can take birth immediately or can take up to 7 weeks, okay? And if your next life, your mind is going to look for, your subtle consciousness will look for next birth based on that karmic propensity or tendencies, what you've collected. So again, all of this is fine. This is interesting, very technical. But if you were to take one point away from it, that you can change it. You can change it now. Right? That's the whole idea behind it, that this is going to happen. And usually, if you've seen somebody dying or accident takes place, or with pandemic, so many people are dying, just like that. They go in healthy, don't come out. But if you've taken this and put these seeds in your mind, then this can ripen in future for a better life or a better place, whatever it is, state of mind. Right? So that's the whole important thing. And we talk about all lives. In Buddhism, we don't talk about just human life or these realms. There are many realms. This is one of them, one of many. But even if you look at animals when they die, you know, certain type of environment during that death process is very important for everyone. Quiet time. And even you don't know what stage they're in. You know, we can't go technical. Oh, they're in the eighth stage. I can't talk now. You can't do that. You don't know what's going on suddenly. So any time a positive seed can go in, if you can say some positive things, our prayers and all kinds of things, anything that goes in only supports that life in a better stage in future. So that's the point of the death process we went through. Okay? And then, of course, we talked about the state of mind. Okay? Even if I don't know if these are dimensions. Okay? And the state of mind. No, I mean, think about that. People right now you can think about that are starving. You can think about people right now, the planes are flying and bombs are falling on them. There are people in right now in pandemic situation that can't breathe. So So no matter how you look at it, that can happen based on your karmic seeds. And so now we've gotten ready to say, geez, I really don't want this kind of dissatisfactory life. I want to do something. Show me the way. So now, according to Venerable Rupina, she says, well, find me the doctor. I've taken poison. Right? Find me the doctor. And so now you take refuge. And we very nicely went through, I think I have some slides on it, just, you know, and then we will go into karma a little bit. So there it is. Whom can I turn to? Okay. So we take refuge in the Buddha. We look at his teachings. They're reasonable. He was a human being like us who got enlightened and taught. Okay. So when you think about the Four Noble Truths, you know, if you think, he tells you that there is suffering. There's a cause. There's a cause for suffering. There is cessation that you can stop all that, and there is a way. So those are the Four Noble Truths. So we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, which is the teachings, and the Sangha, or the community, spiritual community, and sometimes awkwardly used with community in general. Okay, but typically it is with the ordained Sangha members or the spiritual community. So that takes care of that piece. We have a suffering rebirth. We take refuge in the three jewels, also known as three jewels. So triple gem, these are the words they use in triple gem, in the three jewels. By the way, you know, sometimes just for knowledge sake, we'll say of the three times. And what they're talking about is the past, present, and future. Okay? So just keep that in mind. We have a lot of those things in all 10 directions of the three times and things like that. So all directions, three times, meaning past, present, and future. And so now, so fortunate to have the graduated path, the Lamrim. Okay, so that's the whole. So even if you're going through different topics and we go a little bit in there, and what happens, you lose the connectivity. And I want you to make sure we are going through the path. So we stop and take a detour, fill the gas tank up a little bit, but we are still on the same highway. Okay? Okay, so now karma. Now, this is a great place to even say a few words that I took out of my readings, and it's from Venerable Rabina also. So he says, we take on board Buddha's view that we have become enlightened beings, then understand karma, to become an enlightened being. Then understanding karma is vital. Without it, it's a joke. And if we are saying we are a Buddhist, and we are attempting to practice Buddhism, but we are not applying the laws of karma, if you're not taking that as your hypothesis, if you're not applying that in our daily life, we are not really being a Buddhist. In other words, it's all fine when you read about karma and you understand how it works and all that. The key point here is application. And that's why knowing mind is important. When you apply, Geshe-la, how many Sunday classes is this? I've been teaching for 15, 20 years, time to integrate. He uses that all the time to integrate. So even if you learn all of these things, it's a wonderful knowledge. You can all rattle it off once you see a few books. Idea is to really make a change, real effort to make a change, small changes. Okay? And so this is fundamental to Buddhist teachings. The view about the world, how it comes into being, what is our mind, what causes happiness, what causes suffering, etc. So this law applies. Run with it. That is your mind. Okay? So that's what we start karma with. So now when you're talking about karma here, karma means action, right? It's cause and reaction. You do something, seed goes in, there is a reaction to it. No matter if you do good things, then good things, the good effect takes place. If you do bad things, the seeds go in, somewhere it ripens and the bad things happen to you, that kind of stuff. But it is very logical. Okay, karma is like a law. This is like gravity. Remember the example I gave you of Isaac Newton? He didn't invent gravity. He realized sitting under a tree when an apple fell, saying, why did it fall up and didn't go that way? So he contemplated, did some experiments, and finally said, oh, that is what we call gravity. Things within this atmosphere, when they fall, they come down. It's a law. He didn't invent it. He make sure we understood it. And he followed the same way karma. Karma is always there as a law. This is not this tit for tat all the time that we think about from TV shows. If you think about it, it's all your mind. And according to our Geshe's and according to Buddha, your reality is your mind. You brought that to this reality to you. Think about it. Your happiness, you could right now be down. You can turn around, something happens, or you make your mind happy and you're happy. You change, you can change your mind. So how you see and how you, what you put in your mind and what your actions of body, speech and mind are, then that's how karma works. And if your mind has continuum, guess what? What is being filled with? Whatever you do. What your habits are, what your tendencies are, and then what happens? It propels out, goes through bardo, and looks for a sperm and an egg, says, oh, that's the perfect place for me, and then that's the new life again. So important to understand karma. So positive, virtuous actions produce happiness, and negative, non-virtuous actions produce suffering. Make sense so far? Okay. And when we talk about karma, I also want to preface by saying, this is not so linear. Okay, it's not like you do this, this will happen, this will happen. It's not like that. There are so many little subtleties and intention. We'll talk about intentions being the biggest of all of that. So it's very important to understand that, you know, you could have, there could, so many examples can come in your mind and you want to talk about it. There's an entire module on karma, but we'll touch some of these things, at least to give you a good overview of what this topic is all about. So you have an understanding and then develop those questions and you must go through them. You need to understand them. It is not as simple as, okay, A equals B and B equals C. It's not like that. But you need to understand how, what is important is the tendencies in your mind, your actions of body, speech and mind, and then the resulting effect of those causes. That's the important part. It's the natural law. We talked about all of these things. Okay, and we'll cover this now, okay? The 10 non-virtuous actions, the 4 ways the karma ripens, nothing is random. A beautiful writing by Master Nagarjuna. All actions of body, speech and mind created with an attitude of greed, hatred and ignorance lead to suffering. From all actions created with the opposite attitudes of love, compassion and wisdom, only happiness comes. Okay, I'm going to go through my notes to make sure I didn't lose something or I did not mention something. Okay, I think that's good. Very good. Give me one second. Okay, perfect. Well, on target. Okay, so we already covered this, but at least you should know it is not just action of body, but it's actions of body, speech, and mind. And obviously, it's amazing we talk about non-virtuous actions, so there has to be virtuous actions. So you do the opposite, or you apply an antidote. Okay? It's not only avoid killing, but you can help somebody who's dying. It's not only stealing, but be generous and maybe you can give somebody, apologize to somebody, you know? Right? Things like that. So you can look at it from that angle also. It's not always the negative thing only. Remember, you have a precious human life right now. You did many good things for you to take a birth in a human life, to have a human life. So it's not always that way. But this is what you want to learn is because you don't want to do these things. Okay? So we'll cover this now. Karma ripens in 4 ways. So let's go through that. All right. So we are now taking a step forward. Okay, so once you've created karma, the mind, you've taken the seed, it can ripen in 4 different ways. This is how you can, the next time it comes about, this is the ripening of the karma. The first one is the fully ripened result. Okay? What does that mean? Which is the type of rebirth of our consciousness that it will take when it leaves the precious body at the time of the death. So the type of birth it will take. Right? So in other words, if you sow the seed, you'll get the fruit, right? Simple as that, if you want to make a linear connection. Example, the type of rebirth or your consciousness will take when it leaves this previous body at the time of death. For example, virtuous life, you may get a human rebirth. That is in the simplistic rebirth. Okay? The second one is the action similar to the cause. Okay, so the words, the thoughts, and the actions we do in anyone's life are due to the habit of having done them before. Right? So it's exactly that there. So when you sow the seeds, they multiply. Example, all your words. You are an angry person. You're always feeling anger, hatred. Guess what? You can take a birth when it ripens, and you'll be surrounded by people who do that to you. Well, you're surrounded by that kind of group of people that are always saying harsh words or always angry, right? So you got to think about that. That's the propensity of your seed. It likes anger. It likes hatred. So guess where it goes? Where that is existing. Okay? The experience similar to the cause. Okay? So let's think about that. These are things other people or beings do to us. All the things that happen to us, you know, it's basically very similar to the cause, experience similar to the cause. So your experiences are that way. Even if somebody is not harsh to you or not lying to you, but things happen to you because you are connected with those mindsets. You are dealing and willing with those kind of people. And then, of course, there's an environmental karma. Very simplistically put, think about beautiful places you take birth or you are able to go. Today, because of your good karma, you can go to Colorado and go to beautiful parks that we have, for example. Go to serene places. Now think of somebody living in Yemen right now, or Afghanistan right now, or dying in India right now because of pandemic. Right? So that's environmental karma. Pollution. Polluted water. Look what we are doing to our rivers, for example. That kind of thinking. I'm not here advocating one or the other. Different people have different mindsets on this. All I'm telling you is an example that it can be a group or a community environment also that can impact where you are born. Right? So, make sense? So, fully ripened result, the action similar to the cause, the experience similar to the cause, and the environmental karma. So for a given karma, there are four conditions that make the karma complete, and the results are ripened from that. So what is it? What is the full karmic action? So the most important thing to remember is intention. Your mind is fully engaged that you want to do this action. Second is the object. There has to be an object. Anything. A being, object, whatever it is, there needs to be an object. You can take example of a mice, mouse, ant, whatever you want to take. Then the action of killing. And then the result is death. Okay, this seems a little linear, and I gave an example. There are many other examples. And then, of course, many questions can come to your mind. But just for understanding's sake, these four things are important. Intention, object, action, and result. Now, it's important to know this from Lama Yeshe. We create negativity with our mind, so we can purify it, creating positivity with our mind. And this was what I was talking about the mind before, that because your mind changes and it's moment to moment, you have the opportunity to change that. I want to just infuse that in your mind. You have an opportunity to do something about it. Okay? So let's talk about the intention to kill an ant. The main factor there is motivation. You're thinking, oh, what are you doing on my kitchen table? I don't like you. I hate ants. I hate you guys. And then you take your hand or some pad and go, pow, the ant is dead. Okay, so you have the intention, you have the object, you take the action and you complete it and you kill the end. Now, what makes it negative? Think about it this way, in a very easy way of putting it, would you like to be killed? You don't have to look for words. Do you like when somebody steals your hard-earned money? Do you like when somebody disrespects you or calls your names in your face? So if you don't like it, it makes sense that no living creature likes it. But we take it for granted. We somehow think we are different. So that's the point. It's okay. So we can pretty much agree killing, lying, stealing, bad-mouthing are not a good behavior or actions or of body, speech, and mind. Okay? So now take another example. Let's take another lady. Let's say Paula or Patty. Okay? She's in the kitchen. She's talking to her daughter or son or a pet and saying something, and her hand falls on an ant, and the ant dies. Well, were the four criteria met? Was her intention to kill the ant? No. Right? It wasn't the intention. It just happened. Mistake. So it comes down to the motivation behind it. Right? So now the karma was, both ants are dead. The first one and the second one. Maybe it was their karma, but that's not the point. Point is your intention. And so it's very important to understand what mind frame do we have and what is in there. That's what we need to change. That's the main point. Okay? So it says the point is that to determine what karma we do create and how we can begin to protect ourselves. Karma is not a punishment or reward. So take that out. There's nobody sitting at the gate saying you go in line A and you go in line B. You are doing that. It is your mind. It is your seed. And that seed that mind continues. So you can change it to whatever you want your reality to be. That's the point. So you must deepen your wisdom, and then you can benefit from it. Okay? Right, so let's go.
Hemant, we do have a couple of questions that you want, and it is about karma.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is, if anger multiplies with karma, and if kindness multiplies with karma, I guess the good get better and the bad get worse. If that's the case, how can we improve?
You can improve now. You work on it. This is a conscious effort. You look at the logic. You understand the mind. It is difficult. I can tell you that even if you read many deep books, they won't say that it changes overnight. You read a book, you feel a little good about it, now you know. No, you need to work. There are two types of karma. One, the seeds that have not ripened yet. You've been doing it for many lives and it's still not ripened. But what you can control right now is every moment what you do and think and act upon. That's the work. When we talk about developing a practice, when we say do this and do that and in the morning you do this, there's a lot of tools given to you to be able to turn that. You look at the consequences. Once you know death and impermanence, once you know how karma happens, how it ripens, you understand that you can go in suffering realms and or you want a happier life. And if you want to change that course, then what you do is you develop a routine or a practice. You don't become a tennis player overnight. You don't become a bicycle marathon runner or anything. Jennifer knows you can't just lift weights for one day and say, I can go in the Olympics. It takes a lot of work, right? But they have given us the tools and they've given us the practice and they've given us ways to change that. So you are in a class today learning about it. That's the first step. Second of all, you find out a way, how do I change my mind? So apply antidotes, practice. Try a little generosity, not always money, time, effort, kindness, compassion. It's okay to be, somebody cuts you in the line. I always give an example. I used to have a hard time on highway going to work and late for a few minutes and somebody cuts you in front of you. oh boy, does that ego jump up right straight up into the to the head. And then I started practicing, and I would tell myself, maybe that person has an interview and is in a hurry to go get a job. Maybe that person's parent or pet is in trouble and they want to get home quickly. I would turn it around and just tell myself constantly, just don't worry, don't worry. And all of a sudden, slowly, or I would sometimes hit myself on the right-hand side if I did something positive, and I would hit myself on the left-hand side. So I created these little nuances for my own training of mind. And after a while, if somebody cut over, I would say, ah, good merit. Second one, oh, another merit. So I started to play and started to work with my own mind. And you can do all of these things. And we'll today go through a practice called purification, which I'll talk about in a second.
And there's actually a follow-up question as well as a follow-up comment from the person who asked the question. She does say, hang on, let me get to it. That she thinks about a relative who was very angry all his life that seems to have doomed him to a worse next life, and that's upsetting. And then someone else asks, is it possible to purify enough to make up for all non-virtuous actions in a lifetime?
Absolutely. We'll talk about it. If you have a mind that has changed and you put in garbage in it, there's always the ways to get garbage out. So we can change our mind. So definitely. Another thing is, if a person is angry all this life, obviously he or she has brought some seeds with them, right? You don't know what other seeds are going to ripen. You can have a mixed match of things. You could have done something positive, get a human life, but your tendencies of doing something wrong goes with you. And you can see that in example. You can have an extremely rich person with everything they would want, but they're just miserable. Or you can take some very poor person, and people respect that person. So there's all these things weave in. The point is, you're able to make a change. You can help that person. And no matter what they do, you work with them. And hopefully some seeds go in, and maybe there are some good things in the previous life that ripens and they have a better life. But at least by learning the Dharma, you can certainly, as your own, with your own mind, you can certainly change your world. Even if somebody is yelling at you, you can react a certain way. You can speak a certain way. You are more mindful, and you realize how, and you'll see, we'll talk about emptiness, how things exist, and you learn about bodhicitta and karma, and you know that you're not going to get into the drama and create this unnecessarily negative mind. Why? Because you know you want to go and become a Buddha someday, and you got to remove some of these things. So you have to consistently challenge yourself also, right? So it's not about just being a doormat, right? It's about actively working, things you can do, things you cannot do, things do some positive. And you'll be amazed that many people wonder, what makes you so happy? Why are you so kind? Why are you so compassionate? And they will see your whole behavior change. You will see, they will be affected by it in a positive way if you do few things, good things. You know, so there are ways to change yourself. So I know that we can sit here and see all kind of horrible things people do, right? You see all kind of good things people do. Where are you? Are you a judge, a third party? Or are you your own individual? And what do you need to do now is the key. So that's what you can do.
And Hemant, we do have one more question from Julie Lewis. She would rather just unmute and ask because it's too much to type it. So Julie, if you're ready, you can go ahead and unmute. Not sure if she's here. Can you hear me? Oh, there she is. Yeah, go ahead, Julie.
I had to unmute two different things.
It's more complicated sometimes.
Yeah. Going back to what you were just saying, the other person asked, you know, can you purify enough to, you know, all your non-virtuous actions? So whatever you did in the past that you look at as something bad that happened, didn't it actually burn up a lot of karma and you should be happy about it?
You can certainly be happy. And that's why when we go through this process of how you purify, His Holiness always says, never have guilt, right? We talk about regret in a minute. But one thing they say is, when you talk about guilt, I'm such a bad person. I've done such horrible things. Oh my gosh, you know, you go into depression, what I'm thinking. His Holiness says, that's crazy. He says, you don't even know the facts. You know, you're creating, you're putting a whole brush over everything you've done. You've done many good things also, right? And you've done some bad things. The point is, we need to purify those bad things. And if the karma from the past has not ripened, you should be purifying all the time. But you can control what you do now. So what he's saying is, when you do this purification practice, which we will go through today, you can purify the seeds that you may have for eons, many lives, have been doing certain things. You know certain tendencies. You know certain habits. And a good example, and I'll, to your point, I hope this is answering some of it, we've seen people like fishing, right? People are attracted to it. We've even legitimized it to the point where it's supposedly relaxing and so good out in the nature in the boat. And I told my thing. And then there's another person that says, what about the suffering of that fish? You know, have you seen that the fish cannot move his eyes? He cannot make sounds, but he turns up and down, and then hooks going in and out, in and out, in and out. So think about that sentient being for a moment. So you gotta create this kind of compassionate mind for yourself. Obviously, when you're talking about somebody else, you know, they have brought their tendencies and habits with them. And obviously you can talk to them, you can be nice to them, and you don't have to preach anybody, you don't convert anybody, but your actions, and wherever you can be kind to the person, slowly and steadily, they'll see your interaction, and they will also respond a certain way, and that can help. And of course, mind continues. We see in time what life is, and we know it is precious, but this has been happening to all of us. We've all done some heinous things. We've done some good things. But we have this time to be able to change our own mind. It's our individual mind, not somebody else's mind. But you can certainly be kind, be generous, be honest, right? So those qualities can help. And try to help the person the best way you can. You're not here to solve everybody's problem, but you can have a wish to have bodhicitta mind to be benefit to others. That's all. Otherwise, and you want to be in certain mindset to be able to do that. So you have to be very careful and mindful of how you know, Geshe-la says, you swim like a fish without making the waves. You know, I like that. You know, think about it, this entire samsara, job, people, relatives, friends, traditions, birthdays, weddings, events, all of these things. You gotta swim through it. Nobody's saying don't go enjoy. Nobody's saying don't have fun. Nobody's saying anything like that. But every moment you watch your mind and you work at it slowly and steadily. Try it sometime. Right? So Julie, did that cover somewhat?
Yeah, I think it did. It's like if you can get past letting go of your I, forgive yourself, because we all were under heavy delusion when all these things happened. And now that we know better, we don't have to feel guilty or anything. And so that helps make you just feel better about everything.
Did I get it wrong? No, that's perfectly right. And I'm going to go right into it. You just gave me a great segue.
Great.
So it is quite intricate. It's not so simple, not all linear, but you got to think about those things. Right now, at least put in your mind that you have the ability to purify. You have ability to change your mind. You can practice. You've been given the tools. You're learning, and then now you're going to integrate it if that's what you want. And this is very logical, by the way. This is not some cloudy things. This is a fact based how it works. And you got to think about it. That's why we use the word contemplations, right? You got to think deeply, and you'll have many questions come up because we're still limited in how we view things. Our reality is this, right? What we see, what we hear, and then we create our own stories in our head. But this is more about working your mind very slowly and steadily, changing it and integrating all these virtuous mindsets. So let's talk about how to purify a little bit. That's the good news. But before we purify, I mentioned a little bit about this main factor of habit. We talked about just an example of a fisherman. But we bring certain things that are so natural. It's like a magnet. You bring these seeds with you. You've done it in the past. You come here and you legitimize it. We even call it sports. But we don't think in our mind of the suffering of something else. Right? Now, having said that, intentions, motivations, so many factors do play a role. I'm just giving you a very top-level example of that. We just so easily don't think about how others suffer and wanting to help or not, or how we automatically bring our tendencies to do that. So that's important to know. But now that you know that, you can work on it. When you feel strong urge to do something, stop for a few seconds and think, what's the value? Where am I going with this? And if you do that, now that you know, then you can take a different turn if you want to. So it's important to know the first noble truth, because you're touching a little bit on the second scope. But before we go into purification, there are three types of suffering. When we say that there is suffering, that there is dukkha is the word they use. So there's suffering of suffering. And we're talking here about pain, discomfort, unhappiness, just in your face, suffering. Then the suffering of change, okay, pleasure, transitory, sometimes even the temporary happinesses. You know, we think that we are, like, for example, you sit in a hot weather when it's cold inside the house. After a while, what happens? It gets too hot, then you got to come back in the cold. So those kinds of suffering, sometimes we look at it as a temporary pleasure, but long-term it is in the nature of suffering. And then all pervasive suffering is the most subtle. These are the karmic seeds you've already brought with you, dispositions. So this is called pervasive suffering. Just even taking a birth in this body, in samsara, if you think about it from a very, from a top perspective of birth, death, sickness, is life, and passing away, that can be pervasive too. So that's one thing you have to understand. And the second noble truth, that there are causes of suffering. Okay? So if that is important to know, that we talked about it, this, I think, the second class or third class, that they talk about the three poisons, the attachment, all right, the ignorance, the attachment, and aversion. And if you think about it, almost everything stems from the fact about ignorance. We don't know how things are. And so then we have attachments to some things. And when the eye does not get what it wants, we get upset. We have aversion or anger, right? It's mine, I, my thing, my, this is me. And, you know, all of a sudden it becomes real for you. And we'll go through some practice where you'll see that there's no I to be found. Okay, we'll talk about that. But I think it's important to know that when you go, the second noble truth, one is from past karma that you bring up, and then the delusions, you have mental afflictions that cause you to do the negative actions in the first place. So what we say is, watch your body, speech, and mind like a hawk, and refrain from doing harm now. It's a very simple concept if you think about it. If you really deeply think about it, you know, they say do unto others, right, what you want them to do to you. So it's very similar in nature. But you don't like to be killed. You don't like to be hurt. You don't want your limbs taken off. You don't want to do that to others. It's a very simple concept. Okay, we also know that karma can run out. I think we're talking about Julie's stuff, that it ripens sometimes. It can run out. So sometimes you're in a luxury of things, but be mindful if you're in samsara, that can run out. So every day you work at creating more merits, so you don't run out quickly, all right? Or you want to work towards liberating yourself from the cycle completely. that would be the ideal thing, and ultimately get enlightened. So that's your journey, right? And we talked about good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people because of the subtleties of karmic activities and actions of body, speech, and mind. You can be a human and still suffer. You can be a rich person and suffer. You can be a poor person, get respect, that kind of thing. So it's not a hit or a miss. It's very, I don't know how do you say it, step by step it works. It's that like a law. Okay? So we need to clarify. This is the good news. So obviously we can work every single day to change what we do. We watch our body, speech, and mind. But, you know, we also have carried those seeds from previous mindsets and tendencies. We can purify. Okay? So just very quickly, and then we'll go into this meditation I want to go to. I would say it will take us all the way to 8:30. So regret. You recognize that it is wrong, not a guilt. Guilt is considered more of an ego-pleasing, craving thing. Oh, poor me. You know, how bad? So you don't want to go into guilt. Look at it, regret that this was not a good activity, and do something about it. And you don't want to do it again. Then we go in what we call reliance. The beautiful thing is, you remember this, these are called the four opponent powers. It's called the R's, the four R's. Very nice. Yeah, when I first started learning about Lam Rim and I learned four R's, that was the first thing I remember, the four R's. What are they? You know, as well, I ask people, you know, regret, reliance, what is it, you know? So that's something you want to remember. So you rely, okay? You rely on the Buddha's teachings. You rely on Buddha, person who has experienced, who taught us these things, and you rely and you take refuge. And you then develop compassion. There's two parts to reliance. And we'll cover that probably a little more following class. But right now, remember, you rely on this. Now, remember, when you do this, you're not relying on Buddha. This is not somebody sitting up there saying, I will take care of you. You do it. He's showing you the way. He's giving you the tools. He's telling you how to use them. And so you work on it. To me, that was very profound, very different. Typically, we want somebody to forgive us or take care of it, right? Here he's saying, he doesn't purify you. It's a psychological process where you purify yourself. Okay? So you do it. Fully, you're in charge completely. You're the boss. And then you find remedy. You do apply antidotes. If you steal something, give it back or say, I'm sorry. You know, help others, right? If something you've done, some harsh words, you can always say, I'm sorry, and try to be nice to some other people, but do something about it. And that will be taking the remedy. You can undo the wrong you've done. And then finally, you have to have a resolve not to do it again. This sounds a little unrealistic. Can you imagine if you've been doing all your lives, you have a tendency to say, I'll never lie again. Don't do that to yourself. You can say for 24 hours, I will refrain from lying. For next 10 minutes, I will not say harsh words. 10 minutes. You start slow. Right? So that's what it's saying. And this is what starts to change you. Because now you're aware that that's not a good action. What I just came out of my mouth, I don't know where it came from, but it came out of habit. So you tell yourself, next time I'm going to watch my mind like a hawk, and for next half an hour, maybe 2 hours, I will really watch it and see if it doesn't happen. Then you start getting good at it. And after it becomes part of your integration, and all of a sudden, you can go 24 hours. After a while, you go for a month, and then you'll be like, wow, this is like amazing. So this, everybody works differently. Everybody's tendencies are different. Everybody can't do it for all their lives, but you work slowly. You have the tools. That's called resolve. So we're going to do a beautiful meditation. I want to also, we may have a time or we may not have a lot of time, but just letting you know that this is, you bring Buddha, his name is Guru Vajrasattva, is the deity of purification, a Buddha of purification. Extremely, how do I say it? Every Rinpoche will say there are a couple of purification practices. This is one of the strongest ones. is Vajrasattva practice. It's a meditational deity symbolizing the inherent purity of all Buddhas, a major tantric purification for removing obstacles created by negative mind, karma, and breaking your vows. Right? So we're going to do that. There's a mantra involved in this. So that's what takes a long time now. For today, for next time, maybe I will go into a little more details, but it sounds, it has a tone, and the meanings are here. So I'm going to walk you through the meaning, just so at least you understand the meaning. So when you say, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya, what you're saying is the being Vajrasattva, who has the wisdom of all of the inseparable bliss and emptiness. Samaya, O pledge, a pledge that must not be transgressed. Manupalaya, lead me along the path. Okay, which is what you're telling your mind. Okay, Vajrasattva Deno Patita, Dido Me Bhava. So what it's saying is, make me abide closer, Vajrasattva, Vajra Holy Mind. Okay, please grant me a firm, stable realization of ultimate nature of phenomena. Then you say, Sutokayo Me Bhava, Supokayo Me Bhava. Okay, so then you say, please grant me the blessing of being extremely pleased with me. Bless me with the nature of well-developed. Great bliss. And then you say, Anurakto me bhava, sarvasiddhi me prayacha. So you say, bless me with the nature of love that leads me to the state. Please grant me all the powerful attainments. Now, very powerful mantra. So then it says, sarva karma suchame chittam shriyam kurumhum. So which means, please grant all virtuous actions. Please grant your glorious qualities, the Vajra holy mind. Then ha 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 ho. Bhagavan, so that it stands for the five transcendental wisdoms possessed by Buddhas. They understand the emptiness. They have the power of analysis. So they are fully developed. So that's why this five ho, ah, 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 ho is. And Bhagavan, one who has developed every obscuration, attained all realization, and passed away beyond suffering. Okay. And sarvatathagata vajre mame muncha. Those who have realized emptiness, knowing all things just as they are, do not abandon me. And then further goes, Vajra Bhava Masamaya Sattva Aumpe, the nature of indestructible inseparability, the great pledge being the great being who has the Vajra holy mind, the Vajra holy speech, the transcendental wisdom of great bliss, clarifying the transcendental wisdom of inseparable bliss and emptiness, and destroying the dualistic mind that obstructs us. This mantra is very powerful. Most people who have been coming to the center, we say this quite often. It sounds like Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Teno Patita Adito Me Bhava Sutokayo Me Bhava Supokayo Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Prayacha Sarva Karma Suchame Chittam Shriyam Kurum Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Vajre Mame Muncha Vajra Bhava Ma Samaya Sattva Ope. So that's how they repeat it. But I know that a lot of people don't have it, so I wanted to at least tell you the meaning behind it. So we have 15 minutes. I think we can go into a nice meditative position, and without going into anything, just visualize as I talk through it, and just open your mind up, and we will go through this meditation of purification. Okay, so you know the position, you need to have your back straight. Okay. Legs folded, arms relaxed, head tilted slightly forward, relaxed jaw and mouth, tongue sitting on the top of your palate behind the top teeth, and the eyes are slightly open or slightly closed, whatever is comfortable. And relax your body. Now just engage your mind in this way of thinking. The first one we are talking about is regret. So just think about and identify and say to yourself the various actions and habits you have in this life with your body speech that harm others. Just recall them. And you can even speak them to yourself. Okay, I have lied. I've done this, I've done that. And then contemplate the things that you've done with your body, speech, and mind that harm others. Regardless of your reasons, it doesn't matter. And just think of them, just you can even list them sometimes. and think, I regret doing this. I really do. And this is the point now. I don't want future suffering. These have left karmic seeds in my mind, a habit to do this again and again, and this is harming me. I don't want suffering. I'm tired of it. I don't want the harm that others do to me because that's the result of my own past actions. I don't want to continue doing these things because that causes me so much pain and hurt. It's so clear that the feeling to get for yourself, this kindness, this strong recognition that I don't want more suffering, so I regret it from depths of my heart. I regret the things that I have done and said, and all the things I don't remember in this life that I've done to harm others. Of course, I regret them. My depression, my fears, my own jealousy, my own paranoia, my separateness from others, my arrogance, criticizing others, all the stuff that's floating around in my head, my attachment, my neediness, my anger, my hurt. I regret all of these painful states of mind. So I will rely. So this is the second opponent power, reliance. So that's why we talk about refuge first. So now that, what can I do? Whom can I turn to help remove these seeds from my mind before they ripen in the future of my suffering? So here we are using Buddha as our doctor. We rely upon Buddha, rely upon his methods, relieved to have these methods that we can put into practice for our own benefit. So imagine above your head the Buddha of this particular form. He is a monk. It's a classical image of Buddha in monk's robes with the top knot, holding a bow. That's a classical image. This represents the first level of practice, which is subduing the body, speech, and mind. And now, going from the this side to tantric side, we are going to visualize the Buddha in what they call the Bodhisattva aspect, the Vajrasattva aspect for purification practice. He's wearing all these royalty silken clothes, earring, necklets, all beautifully decorated. That's the Bodhisattva style. So we imagine the Buddha in this way. He's sitting the same way we are, above our heads. He's got a white light body. Everything is radiant white, sitting on a white lotus. He's sitting in a full lotus position. Just imagine it. Everything made of light. In his left hand, he holds a bell representing a full development of the wisdom wing. And in his right hand, he is holding what they call Vajra or Dorje in Tibetan, which represents the compassion wing. The union of these two represent complete Buddhahood. It's a very beautiful face, sweet, radiant face. His earlobes, neck, arm, and feet are decorated like you see in this particular image that I have on the slide. Infinite compassion, an embodiment of compassion and wisdom. So if you have a spiritual teacher and you've committed yourself to someone who you call your Lama or your spiritual teacher, then you can imagine it's actually their mind, their consciousness manifesting as Buddha for your benefit. It makes very personal, truly seeing the Lama as your Buddha. If you don't have a vivid visualization, don't worry. Just imagine it the best that you can. You got to start somewhere. The second part of this is compassion. So now we go from the reliance on refuge to the compassion side. So we think of those we have harmed, been unkind to, our parents, our friends, and so forth. People we didn't like, so many people we said mean words to. So think like this. I know what it is like to suffer, and I've harmed them. I must change. I must purify this karma so I can only benefit others. It is harder. Why would you have compassion for others? Because we think of karma. We know their own harming of others is what will cause them future suffering. For this reason, we have compassion for them. They hold on to anger, the resentment that will only cause them suffering. So we deeply have compassion for them. We must purify ourselves for their sake too. And then we go to remedy. So now we turn to the third step. We take the medicine. We do a little visualization and reciting of the mantra. This is the medicine we are taking, the remedy. So just imagine from the heart of this Lama, Vajrasattva, above our heads. He sends a very powerful hose of energy that comes from his heart and hooks around. He's sitting above your head. So the energy hooks around and comes under him and comes into your crown. Just imagine this. Powerful nectar. So strong that it arcs. It's forcing out all the imprints of all the harm you've ever done with your bodies. This is the first stage of purification. It's a forceful, blissful energy coming from Lama Vajrasattva. And think of all your harm that you've done, the negativity that you've done is disappearing into space. It's just pushing it right out until there's not one atom left. It's gone completely. Imagine this. I really want this. Typically, in this meditation, you would say the mantra, but we will continue. It's optional. And then we purify our speech. Again, forcefully entering through our crown. The time filling is the time filling us very powerfully this time. And forcing out through the top of our parts of our body all the imprints of all the harm we've ever done to our speech, all the bad mouthing, the gossip, the harsh speech, all the criticism and judgments. Now think, this energy, this light, completely cleansing that out. Not even one atom left, just purifying you. And imagine this and say, I want this. Again, we would typically do a full 100-syllable mantra here, but we'll go on. And now we purify the negative karma of our mind instantly, dispelling all the negative states of mind. So Lama Vajrasattva sends a very powerful beams of light that enters into our crown, instantly filling us. These negative states of mind, which are the source of our own suffering and the source of harm we do to others, that means the root ignorance, the primordial misconception about self, the ego grasping, the attachment, the anger, pride, depression, jealousy, fears, all of these, we imagine, totally full of radiant light and it's dispelling the darkness instantly. As Lama Yeshe says, like turning on the light in a dark room, the darkness is instantly dispelled. Just imagine that. And finally, we want to resolve. So now the fourth step, and the most important, the one that helps change. So we mold our minds into whatever shape we like. So we've taken vows already, not to kill or not to steal, right? Reiterate this in your mind. There many other vows, bodhisattva vows, tantric vows. So whichever vows you've taken, you make a pledge not to break them. So strongly determined, happily determined not to break any commitments. So let's say we have old habits, really bad habits, the things that harm others and the things that, of course, harm ourselves. Habits internally and external habits with our body and speech. We each know ourselves very well. We make a determination, maybe for 24 hours, I will not badmouth someone. I will not lie for 5 hours. I will not be angry for a day, a week, or a month. And give yourself a timeline and a strong commitment. While the external circumstances are strong, our mind can be even stronger. So for a few seconds, do your own contemplation. One thing you'd like to give yourself a little timeline on, really strong. It's between you and you. No one else has to know about it. It's your mind, and you are in charge. And think, I will do my best and be honest with myself. Know I can change and take them one step at a time. Be brave, courageous, sincere, and know that you can change step by step. And now, imagine, Lama Vajrasattva was so delighted, like a loving friend, like a loving parent, so delighted with us. He dissolves now, you imagine, into a white light. The lotus, his body, everything into white light, radiant light that enters through our crown chakra, just in front of our spine. Enters into us, and imagine, comes to our heart chakra, where our very subtle consciousness is residing. There, it merges with your own mind. Just imagine this, the radiant white energy, the Buddha's mind, the Lama's mind, my mind, same thing. So now we finish with a dedication. Throughout this session, we've listened to so many things, trying to process them, analyze them, think about them. We've participated in an incredible, powerful purification practice. How wonderful. May it benefit our minds. We dedicate all of this sowing of all these seeds for the sake of all sentient beings. And may this compassion grow and grow in the hearts of all. Thank you.
Thank you, Hemant.
Okay, I know it's 8:30. So for homework, all I want you to do is continue reading the third requirement. I think it is actually goes through the entire Lambrim in small paragraphs. And even if you go to page 20, until page 29 of the third reading, I think it will stop at karma. So let me just make sure, and then we can go. Yeah, it's called an outline of the path to enlightenment. And you read 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 pages. And that will walk you through everything that we've covered so far. And next class, we will be in the middle of the second scope, and we'll talk about how we wind up coming in this samsara, and then why we want to create a mind of renunciation. And then the following two classes will cover a little bit of emptiness, and then we'll get into bodhicitta and the sixth perfection. And that should close out very nicely and will summarize the entire thing. I hope this was helpful, and you're getting right into it now. You now know refuge and karma and the realms and the death and impermanence and the three contemplation and a little bit more about the mind and how it continues. So it's a good time to make a change. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye.